What is principle for me? This is Dr. Herbert O'Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today, what is principle for me? All of us have an idea of what principle is, and that idea is we don't know. We have no idea what principle is. All we know is principle involves a lot of things like thoughts, and it involves a law of cause and effect, and it involves attitudes, and I don't know, what else can it involve? Anybody got any suggestions here? What does principle involve?
Law of cause and effect.
That's what I said. That's okay. Anything else?
Liking myself.
Yeah. Yeah,
promises.
Keeping promises.
Keeping promises and liking yourself, and yeah.
Promises is like a vow, like your vows.
Yeah, yeah, like your vows. Your vows are always to yourself. Okay, now.
Unconditional love.
But you see, unconditional love is an aspect of the law. See, now, the law itself is what, it's law of cause and effect, what you put into motion is what you get as a response. And people say, well, I don't believe that. I don't believe that what I put in motion I get. If I put a cause in motion, I like me, I like me, I like me, and then all of a sudden bad things start happening to me. Well, what are you really saying? Are you really saying I like me? Or are you saying, I like me, I wish I like me, I wish I like me, I wish, you know? Are you really being honest with yourself? You know, this is the thing that gets me so keyed off. I look at this on PC. Is that what they call the television that's successful to little children? PG.
Okay.
I look at that PG, and here the little children are standing in front of their mother, and the mother says, now, were you all good kids today? And they all, of a sort, put their hands behind their back and cross their fingers. And they say, yes, Mommy. Now, they're lying. And the theater and everything teaches them to lie and say that's okay. Well, you can't do that. That is not a little lie. That is a gigantic lie. And that is saying, I really am not good, Mommy, but I'm saying I'm good just for you. I'm holding my fingers crossed. Now, let's all know that Dad's going to win the race. Okay, let's cross our fingers now. You know, that's a symbol that we're wishing he's going to win. Well, that's not it. We should go up and say, Dad, you're a winner. Dad, you're fantastic. Dad, when you bring that trophy home this afternoon, we're going to have a special place on the mantle all cleaned up ready for it, you know. You know, that's confidence. That's believing in it. That's knowing that the principle you put into motion is going to happen. Now, people come to us here at the University of Healing with all sorts of ailments and all sorts of stigmas and all sorts of attitudes that are enough to choke a horse. And they have choked the horse before they got here. My goodness sakes. And then they come here and they say, now let me tell you what my problem is. And we say, adios. You are not welcome here. Go home. Go home. If you want to come here and tell us what your solutions are, what you'd like to work on to bless your life, to fulfill your life, we're with you. But if you want us to regurgitate, you know what regurgitate means, and eat over and over and over again your problems, then go somewhere else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Go somewhere else. Only the baby birds like their mothers to regurgitate food into their mouth, you know. Not humans or anybody else. We find that an anathema, not acceptable at all. Now, so what do we do? People come, and the doctor doesn't listen to you when you go into his office and give him your symptoms. The doctor takes your measurements and takes this temperature and all that sort of stuff and puts you on different devices. Now, the doctor listens to those things for what's wrong with you. The doctor listens to your garbage, your reiteration, your regurgitation of your complaints as to why you have it. Now, why do you have a headache? I got a headache. And you tell yourself you have a headache. So you have a headache. Now, did you ever have a little headache and you say, oh, I feel so wonderful. I feel so light and so charming and so wonderful. I feel just, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Did you ever have any little incident that came up in your mind or thought and your experience or your body that was rather hurtful or made you feel unhappy, and then you dwelt upon it? What happened when you dwelt upon it? When you dwelt upon that which made you unhappy, you got unhappier. And it became exacerbated. It grew and grew and grew and grew and grew until it was not pleasant at all. Well, this is what we do. Now, the doctors, they do their symptomatic study of you, and you, by your mental attitude, by your miserable consciousness, you tell the doctor what your real problem is. What you really, I really want to be unhappy. I really want to be sick. That's why I'm talking about it all the time. I have a nephew, Scott, and Scott was found to be diabetic when he was a child. And they told him he would have a short life, because back then, that was some 40 years ago, they didn't have too good a handle on things. And so they told him he could expect to live a short life. Well, Scott said, I love life. Now, I'm going to live a long time. And I'm going to be happy. And they told him, if he had a healthy body, that would help him to accomplish what he wants to do. If he had a healthy body, a strong and healthy body, well fed, well organized, well organized. So, what did he do? What sport did he go out for? It was not a team sport, although he was good at tennis and other. Gymnastics. He went out for gymnastics. And you know, he became so good in school, in elementary school and junior high school and high school, he became so good. He was put on to represent their teams everywhere and win for them. And they have what is called the Iron Cross. This is where the gymnast will put his two arms straight out to the rings and hold on to them and keep his arms rock steady. Keep his arms rock steady. I move my tape recorder away from my mouth when I'm talking to him. And he moves, keep his arms rock steady, and then spin and flip and raise his legs up like that, and all on his arms hanging out of each side of his body. And you can imagine that takes a great deal of strength and takes a great deal of concentration and it takes a great deal of earth. He went through, he had to take his insulin. He had to do the things that were required for the diabetes that he was experiencing. But it was as though he was untouched. It was as though he was untouched. Nothing stopped him. He wanted to be a Boy Scout, and they wouldn't let him be a Boy Scout and go camping with them because he was diabetic, and they were afraid something would happen to him because they heard all the horror stories. So what did he do? He didn't let that bother him. He just let a couple of years go by. And he became a scout master, and he took them out. And he did all the things that he wanted to do earlier, but so it came a little later. And he didn't worry about it. He just learned everything about scouting, and learned everything, and passed all of their programs, and did all their things. And to have scout masters is a tough thing, you know. I was in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Corona del Mar. I'll find it one city or another. I was in Corona del Mar, and Mark was a little boy. He was about 12, I don't know, 10, 11, because 12 you go into Boy Scouts. And he was in Cub Scouts. He wanted to go into it. So I took him down to the Cub Scout pack in Newport Beach. Nice Cub Scout pack in a nice building, real nice operation. And the Cub Master was my neighbor. And so we went down there, and we watched and participated in all the things they did. I had been a Cub Scout and Boy Scout when I was a child. And so my neighbor said, Herb, I've got to go down to Brazil and build some houses for a couple of days, a couple of weeks. Would you fill in for me while I'm gone? And I said, sure, glad to. He never came back. I ended up being the Cub Master for all these kids. And it was so great. But it was so great. Now, all these kids were coming from broken homes because that was what Corona del Mar was, you know, and society people who either got rid of their husbands or wives and they had their kids. And so these kids would be marching along with me and grabbing a hold of my leg and you know, hugging me and wanting to have some affection because they didn't have a daddy or a mommy or something at home. And my son would be marching there and they'd say to him, doesn't that bug you that these kids are all hanging on your dad? And he says, I got him at home. But you see, that's the big thing. He didn't let anything bother him. He knew he had me. He knew he had the whole nine yards, and he wasn't concerned. Now, if we want to have the fulfillment of the law of cause and effect, if we want to have that principle that we talk so much about to be effective for us, it means we have to take charge of ourselves. It means we have to determine what it is we want. And remember this song. You've got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, accentuate the positive, and don't mess with Mr. In-Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. That's a song that was in the 30s and 40s, and it was a favorite. And what that meant was if you're going to live a positive life, don't think about the negative. And don't even think about the in-between state of becoming positive, leaving the negative. Just be positive in everything. Accentuate the positive. Eliminate the negative. And don't mess with Mr. In-Between. Get right in there and live it and do it. Now, that's principle. That's living the principle. That's living the law of cause and effect. And that is having effective results from whatever cause you put in motion for yourself. Now, do you go to the doctor to have him tell you how to handle a problem? Or do you go to the doctor to have him help you handle a solution? Do you want to continue with your problem? You want to continue with your headaches, your migraines, or do you want to let them go? Well, what's the first thing the doctor tells you to do if he is a full-fledged doctor? Sylvie, what does he tell you to do?
Take two aspirins.
No, please, don't be so sensible. What does he tell you to do if he's a real top good guy? He says what?
Relax.
He says relax. He says, calm down. Calm. Your headaches are caused by tension, by anxiety, relax. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I can't treat you as a psychiatrist, but I am a medical doctor, and so we'll treat you as a migraine headache. And migraine headache says relax and take a couple of aspirins and go to bed, you know, but relax. And let go of all the anxiety and the problems you got. Now, the minute he starts entering into that field, he enters into the field of what they call psychiatry. It used to be that the general practitioner doctor could do all those things, you know, and it was okay. But now they're afraid to. And it's up to us to be our own general practitioner, our own medical therapist, you know. And remember, tension, anxiety kill more people than anything else in the universe. In fact, probably it's the only thing that kills people. Yeah. You want to put a cause in motion for anything in life?
Okay.
Don't put it in motion for your problem. Put it in motion for your solution. And then you have the principle either way. The law of cause and effect either way. But what results do you want? Then you put the principle in motion in the direction that you want it. So go out, do it, have fun, and remember that I'm watching you, and I'm smiling on you, and I'm loving the jabbers out of you, because I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.